my take at thetakeaway.org. So it was a moment of candor last night on 60 Minutes that really bears repeating. Listen.
The hardest thing about the job is staying focused because there's so many demands and decisions that are pressed upon you.
Staying focused. Barack Obama talking with Steve Kroft last night on 60 Minutes. Joining us now is Kathleen Hall Jamison. Kathleen, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
I certainly don't want to waste my time with you here at the top of the show talking about the likability factors of Barack Obama, which are endlessly discussed. But here is an individual. Talk about that staying focused idea, who has so many opportunities to connect with the American people. There's a 24/7 news cycle that has, that exploded during the campaign and has really continued throughout the first days of the Obama presidency. You've got him all over the media last week. Is he driving this, or is he responding to a tremendous interest in the success of his very popular presidency so far?
I think he's doing both. And in an environment in which you have 24-hour news, the danger is that people talking about you creates the public's context for viewing what it is you're doing. So a candidate in this age behaves in a way that tries to gain as much unfiltered access to the public, and now a president in this age apparently is doing the same thing.
So it's the same problem for a candidate. You've got to upstage the people who are talking about you, which means you've got to be on more, which runs the risk of tiring people out.
Or if you do it well, it creates a different kind of presidency, one in which we come to expect that part of the role of the president is at the desk solving the problems, but part of the role is functioning as educator-in-chief, explaining to the public what the challenges are and how we're going to get to solutions. Mobilizing the public to endorse presidential action is as much a part of the job as taking presidential action, particularly when you've got the economy as a central issue, and confidence in the economy is in part going to determine whether or not the economy rebounds.
You know, it seems to me the Obama presidency takes the communicator notion of Ronald Reagan to a whole different level of complexity. Listen to this moment on 60 Minutes last night, where you can hear Barack Obama really struggling with the essential contradiction of the office, to be accessible and sort of friendly and reassuring, but also to be serious and presidential. Listen to this.
The only thing less popular than putting money into banks is putting money into the auto industry.
18% are in favor. 76% against.
It's not a high number.
You're sitting here and you are laughing about some of these problems. Are people going to look at this and say, I mean, he's sitting there just making jokes about money with them. How do you deal with it? I mean, explain the your mood and your laughter.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be.
Are you punch drunk?
No, there's got to be a little gallows humor to get you through the day.
Now, listen to that. I mean, Steve Kroft, of course, not helping at all, as no member of the media should. But the president, you know, walking this line between being relaxed and expressing urgency.
And in the process, reframing his laughter, not as, you know, laughing at, but as a kind of coping mechanism, and trying to signal the public that, you know, it's all right in these times to laugh, provided that we stay focused on the problem. This is a very sophisticated media strategy, and it's one that gambles that the president is adept enough to continue to control those moments in which he's being interviewed so that gotcha moments or inadvertent statements do not come to characterize his presidency negatively, but instead frame it as someone working hard, coping well, staying on message.
But it's got to be beyond simply staying on message. Again, that was something that was invented in the sort of Reagan era, it seemed to me, and moved into a whole different kind of photo op White House strategy during the Clinton era. But now you've also got way beyond simply appealing to the American people over the heads of Congress and pundits. You've got Barack Obama calling out his campaign army to basically go onto the street and advocate for the budget. Does this kind of thing have any precedent, and does it work?
Well, first, that is part of staying on message, because essentially what the presidency is now doing is handing the volunteers from the campaign the president's message that, incidentally, you've also heard from him, so you've got that consistency, and then carrying it through. Does it potentially work? It depends on whether those volunteers act on the request to go out and talk to neighbors and whether they stay on message. But listen to what you've heard across the last week and a half. You've heard that the president has an unprecedented number of problems. You've heard this from him. And that who would have imagined a year ago that someone would have said that Iraq wasn't the most urgent, although it remains urgent. Suppose you hear that in conversation with your neighbors after having heard it from the president. You now have another layer of agenda setting working to increase the likelihood that that's what you talk about when you talk to someone who is not a Barack Obama volunteer.
Well, certainly the domestic problem of the economy really lends itself to a domestic kind of foot soldier strategy for staying on message. When people see volunteers on the street or see Barack Obama, are they looking at a Democrat or are they looking at someone who transcends party? And if so, he transcends party, what is the GOP to do? They've so far stayed really out of this debate, saying no more spending. We're going to stay in this kind of tax and spend tent and wait for the next presidential cycle.
If they see someone who's a Democrat, then the strategy is failing. The strategy only works if you say, I know what the president is saying to me about these issues. And whether I agree with him or not, I do understand why he's doing what he's doing. The problem for the Republicans is they don't have the ability to gain unfiltered access or lightly filtered access anytime that they want, and they don't have a single individual who speaks for party. That's the disadvantage of the U.S. system for the party out of power and the advantage that you've got in a British system. And so you've got a situation in which you're hearing disparate voices from the Republicans, and they're not on a consistent message. And as a result, net advantage to the White House.
But Kathleen Hall Jamison, you've also suggested that there's a whole other twist here as well, that part of the media strategy of Barack Obama is to separate himself as well from Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, the Democrats in Congress, that he's got to transcend them as well. They begin to look a little more like a traditional opposition than even the GOP. Am I right or wrong?
Well, and they get less total airtime with a message that might undercut his because he's now becoming the voice that speaks for that point of view. So unless they differ dramatically, they're more likely to look as if they're just bickering children. The contest becomes one in which if they take any exception, the media frame them as being the opposition, and that could be highly problematic. But it could also be beneficial because they're the Washington insiders. He's the Washington outsider then, trying to represent the people he's talking to directly. If this strategy succeeds, it makes it more difficult for them to take exception from him, and it keeps his Washington outsider posture. If it fails, he becomes highly accountable for every single policy he's articulated because there are no cabinet people who have comparable kinds of roles
right.
to cabinets in the past fronting the administration's arguments, hence people he can distance from when the policy runs into problems.
So his transcendent role, if he fails, becomes isolated and more like a Jimmy Carter rather than FDR. Before we go, let's look at Barack Obama. And again, it's easy to kind of overemphasize the smarts here, but this guy is pretty darn good. Here in talking with Steve Croft, it sounds to me like he's answering Steve Croft's question, but he's talking to all of the media here.
They need to spend a little time outside of New York because, if you go to North Dakota or you go to Iowa or you go to Arkansas, where folks would be thrilled to be making $75,000 a year without a bonus, then I think they'd get a sense of why people are frustrated.
He's answering Steve Croft's AIG question that the bonuses are needed to retain these people in New York. His statement, get outside of New York, is really a warning to the media, it seems.
It is, and it also reminds you that you've seen him outside New York in town halls across the country, and as a result that he is, and they're again replaying their campaign theme, in touch with the middle class and Washington outsider, in this case New York outsider, but not someone inside
right.
the power structures that create problems.
Well, a big strategy, a complex strategy. Will it succeed or fail? We'll be checking in with Kathleen Hall Jamison again. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Kathleen Hall Jamison, director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.